Hello and welcome to February. It's the lineup with from True Blue LA podcast. I don't know why I went into the Demolition Derby voice, but I did.
We need to start recording on Sunday. I mean, that should be our new thing.
Well, it's Thursday. There's no baseball today, but we're getting so close. You call it, you were calling it fake baseball. It's real baseball. It's the purest form of baseball.
Just to be clear, the fake part of it is the reporting and full workouts. Like that's just milling around. Like once the spring training actual games start, those also don't count, but there's an opportunity for a tie. So that's the realest form of baseball there is. So I'm in. Yeah.
Well,
and that's this month. Yeah.
It's been 3 weeks. We took an extra week off, just kind of getting back into the swing of things after, you know, we've done an episode since the holidays, but we're still a little in the lull, and honestly, not a ton going on. But 3 weeks, there's enough for you to catch us up on. You and I are both in the best podcasting shape of our life, so we're going to dive into that and questions from Craig after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know, I like the World Baseball Classic, but it does make spring training different, weird.
Yeah, there's
splintered.
It is a little weird because for one thing, this is our first, like, I guess 2021 was a normal length spring training, but it was also weird because of it was still under like COVID restrictions, so it was a little disjointed. But like, so this is our first like normal spring training since like 2019. But like the whole point of spring training being like 6 weeks or whatever is so starting pitchers can build up, and it seems like the World Baseball Classic like eats into that a little bit. Like it just tweaks just a little bit like that timeline, because it's still like it's like mid-March, or I think the World Baseball Classic runs till about 2 weeks before opening day. And so you're like pitchers are like getting built up. And then they're like, okay, we're going to go over here for a little bit and see in a few days, you know, that kind of a thing. But it's always a little bit odd. But that tweaks the so pitchers and catchers for the Dodgers, first workout, like the normal first workout is February 16th. So I guess the pitchers and catchers report on the 15th. But for World Baseball Classic pitchers and catchers, which for the Dodgers, I believe is Will Smith is catching, you have Clayton Kershaw, Julio Urias. I don't remember which other pitchers, if any, are going to be on the World Baseball Classic, but I haven't seen all the full rosters. But at least that group is going to be like there on the 13th. And generally some players trickle in early anyway. But like, which basically means we're like a little, like a week and a half basically. And like people are going to be at Camelback Ranch on the backfield doing stuff. And that's, although to be fair, like I saw Yency Almonte was like throwing a bullpen yesterday, I think, at Camelback Ranch. He posted on Instagram. So like they're there. They're just not formally just yet. But it's a little weird.
Are you looking forward more to the first World Baseball Classic game or the first spring training game?
First spring training game for sure.
Okay,
because there could be a tie.
Can there not be? Can there be tie? How does? I'm trying to remember how WBC ties.
Do they do like a do they do man on second? I don't remember.
Yeah, I feel like that was a new thing, but maybe not. Maybe that was the thing they borrowed. I'll do some googling while you catch us up on roster news, because not a lot of.
Yeah,
news, but insight, I guess, is what we have.
Yeah. So when we last recorded, it was like a day after the Dodgers traded for Miguel Rojas, and we're like, "Hey, is he going to be the shortstop? You know, that kind of a thing." Or So, but there's been a little more like clarity since then in the few weeks. And so for one thing, there was sort of a little bit of uncertainty regarding his right wrist. Or was it his right wrist? I think. Was it his left? I think it was left. Whatever. One of his wrists, I'll say right now. But he had surgery in like a debridement surgery at the end of the season. But then he needed a second surgery, and I believe he already had that, like sometime like 10 days before the end of January. I think on one of the podcasts he said I think they had to remove like a part of a bone that was growing out and it was just causing irritation. So he's supposed to be ready by the beginning of spring training, or so he should be in relatively decent shape. But there was some uncertainty, like what he would eventually need another procedure. I guess he already had that, so that's taken care of. But we last episode we tried to like divvy up playing time at a bunch of positions, and Rojas was like a key to that because it's like, where does Gavin Lux go? Where does Rojas go? And it sounds like Rojas himself has said this. He has a podcast with like Chris Rose on the John Boy Network, which is a weird thing to say out loud. He also was on Dodger Talk with David Vasse mentioning this, but he basically said like he's going to be playing all over the infield and, you know, the whole spiel about wherever they want me, that kind of a thing. Dave Roberts at a community event on Thursday. I did not go to this. This was earlier today. He said the Dodgers are doing Fan Fest this Saturday, so there's going to be a bunch of interview type stuff this weekend. But Dave Roberts said he sees Rojas playing shortstop, second, third, and maybe some left field. That seems literally out of left field, I think. But this was Dave Roberts' quote per Rowan Kavner at Fox Sports. He said, quote, he's open to doing whatever will help the Dodgers win. So you got your boilerplate sort of standard type stuff there. Then sort of bolstering that, Andrew Friedman last week on MLB Network Radio. And again, he in sort of Andrew Friedman speak sort of couched it in a way that is not etching things in stone or even in dark pencil. But he said most likely the infield, obviously Freddie Freeman at first, Max Muncy at third, Gavin Lux getting the most time at short, and Miguel Vargas at second base. And that, so that jived a little bit with earlier in the offseason. There was some mentions of Vargas working at second. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic had it as a point in one of his columns. In his weekly newsletter this week, Juan Toribio at MLB.com, he talked to GM Brandon Gomes, who said Vargas has been working mostly at second and a little bit at third. Vargas has played third the most in the minors, but he's also played a lot of second. And last year they kind of maneuvered him into left field a little bit to increase his versatility. But Gomes told Toribio, quote, Vargas is our second or third fastest guy on the team, which is probably not appreciated at all. So he's a good athlete. It's more about getting him reps and getting his feel at second base. I think a combination of it all is really strong. So, you know, we talked about this before. There's still going to be a lot of mixing and matching, but it seems like that's how they're going to start things at least. So we have a little more clarity there. The Dodgers, like I said, haven't made a roster move since then, at least on the major league side. They haven't even announced their non-roster invitees officially yet. I think the only one they officially announced was Jason Hayward back in early December. There's been like other signings trickling in minor league wise. Some of the more recent ones are pitching heavy, and I think most of these will get non-roster invites, but honestly, like some of them did not pitch well enough the last couple years to even have that. So I think they all just might end up being triple A depth anyway. But a couple of the names that stood out, Jordan Yamamoto, he's the youngest of sort of the group of veteran pitchers. He's 27. He also didn't pitch in the majors last year, and he had a 6 ERA at AAA. So it's like, all right. He's been hurt a lot. He missed like the last 4 months in 2021 with right shoulder soreness. He is probably best known for being a key piece in the trade from Milwaukee to Miami in the Christian Yelich deal in 2018. They also signed Matt Andrees, who's 33. He pitched in Japan last year after pitching 7 years in the majors. He's a local guy, born in Redlands, went to UC Riverside, Dylan Covey is also local. He went to high school in Pasadena. He pitched for Rakuten in the Chinese Professional Baseball League the last 2 years. He's 31. So, I don't know. Not a lot of those guys move the needle for me, but, like, that's the kind of news that's been, like, trickling in terms of roster stuff. In terms of the folks, like, already on the team, we were a couple days away from the arbitration exchange deadline last time we recorded. They settled with 9 of the 10 ARB-eligible players. Like, Urias got a deal. Bueller got a deal. Will Smith is his first time through those. Those all signed. The only one they didn't sign was Tony Gonsolin. They exchanged figures. He wanted $3.4 million. The Dodgers were at $3 million. And usually that has tended to mean either that the Dodgers will probably go to a hearing at that point, or they would probably talk on perhaps a multi-year deal. He's a Super 2 player, so like not quite 3 years of service time, but one of the top people in service time for folks with over 2 years. So the arbitration hearings began for MLB this week in Arizona. They're basically like a three-week period, or not in Arizona, in Florida. But the Dodgers avoided a hearing on Tuesday by signing a 2-year deal for Gonsolin worth $6.65 million. So my first thought on this was it seemed kind of low. So even had Gonsolin lost, they went to a hearing and he lost, he's getting $3 million this year. If he's like reasonably healthy and just doesn't even have to have a good year, just like a normal year, he's going to get a raise higher to a point that it's higher than $3.65 million next year. So on that level, it seemed a little odd. The breakdown of the contract is $3.25 million this year, which is a little bit higher than the midpoint, $3.4 next year. But I think the key to the deal is it has escalators in it. They're kind of not quite identical to the same deal that Walker Buehler signed in 2021 when he was a Super 2. Buehler also had a higher guarantee. His was $8 million over 2 years, but he also had a better track record, that sort of thing. Gonsolin's 2024 salary can increase by $3 million based on games. They use this complicated point system where normally, like, Buehler's sort of thresholds for this were just starts. But with Gonsolin, they put in there where it's 1 point for a start and 1 point for each relief appearance that is at least 3 1/3 innings. So I think they're sort of building in where, you know, Gonsolin's more likely to like follow an opener than say, you know, Buehler is or something like that. The first time I saw this type of incentive structure was in Alex Wood's contract before the 2020 season. It's probably been around longer than that. That was just the first time I remember seeing it. It didn't really matter because he got hurt that year and he ended up not hitting any of the incentives, but so it's like basically $500,000 each for like 14, 16, 18, 20, 24, and 28 of those points or whatever. Gonsolin started 24 games last year, so if he just does that again, it's $2.5 million extra on his 2024 salary. He also gets raises if he gets Cy Young votes. Basically, if he finishes in the top five, he was headed for that had he not gotten hurt in 2022. So in a way, he's kind of betting on himself. So I still think it's a team-friendly deal, but that's kind of the nature of the beast on some of these things. And I think it has Gonsolin accepting most of the risk. It seems like a pay-for-play almost. It's not on the level. I mentioned this in the comments the other day. It's not quite Kenta Maeda because mm-hmm. that was like an extreme where his base salary was so low and you can make like $10 million in bonuses, but like your base salary is $3 million a year. So you're basically, that's like the kind of stuff that owners salivate over basically, like, oh man, this is the greatest contract. That it's not that, but it's like, it's still team friendly. But also if you look at it from Gonsolin's standpoint, I also kind of get it. So his signing bonus out of college was $2,500. His first full major league season was cut short by a pandemic, so he didn't even get like a full season of a major league salary. From his 2019 major league debut in midseason to through last year. His career earnings are like less than $2 million. I think it's closer to $1.8 million or so. He's also been hurt the last two seasons. Shoulder soreness in 2021 that had two long injured list stints. This last year, he missed the last 6 weeks until coming back at the very end with a forearm strain. He wasn't the same in the playoffs. His 133 and two-thirds innings last year is only six innings shy of his professional high, which was set in 2018. Those are his only 2 years with more than 81 innings total. That includes majors, minors, and postseason combined. So, like, this is just a guy who hasn't pitched a lot, really. So I can sort of see why Gonsolin opted for the guarantee of 2 years, because, you know, it's like it's the Tyler Anderson situation, but, like, on a smaller scale. Tyler Anderson had pitched for a long time in the majors. This was his, like, one chance at a, like, decent contract. And he could have taken, like, $19.65 million, the qualifying offer from the Dodgers. But he basically got double that guarantee with the Angels on a three-year deal. And after, like, you know, sort of not toiling, but, like, that's a big number, you know? Like, it's hard to, like, not take that rather than, like, take the higher money now and then see what happens next year. So for what it's worth, on MLB Network earlier Thursday, in an interview with Alana Rizzo, Gonsolin mentioned that's kind of the goal, to get that security, to go out there and just compete and not have to worry about anything. You know you're going to come back. You know you're set for the next 2 years. You can just go out there and throw. So a little bit was peace of mind. And honestly, like, I was looking back, the Dodgers haven't done a lot of these, like, deals for, like, young players either. It's almost all been, like, during arbitration and not, like, super long deals. Like, Gonsolin, Buehler got two-year deals. Chris Taylor, Austin Barnes got two-year deals. Max Muncy got 3 years. Those are all covering arb years only. They haven't really done, like, one of those, like, 1990s Cleveland moves or, like, current Atlanta Braves moves, mm-hmm. where you're, like, trying to lock up guys super early. But I don't know if that's from, like, lack of trying or that the some of the players, like, you would think, right, like, Bellinger might have been a candidate for this, like, early on, but then his agent's also Scott Boras, probably steering him towards free agency. Same with Julio Urias, like, who knows, but, like, he's Boras guy too. So it doesn't always work out that way where maybe the player doesn't want to do, but I also don't think they've necessarily pursued those types of deals. They're just mm-hmm. kind of willing to go year to year. But that's sort of where we're at. That's the roster. I don't know. They could, I guess, add, like, someone in the next week and a half. Who knows? But they might
kind of struck me as a year where there's so many, like, medium floor, like, low, like, high ceiling, but could have medium floor situations with all the young players and all the turnover this year. It kind of feels like a year where maybe they just let that ride for sure. 2 or 3 months and then aggressively fill whichever position didn't work out at the closer to the trade deadline.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think even if they were going to add someone in the next week to 10 days, like, one I was thinking about, I think people in the comments have mentioned it too, but he just signed with the Blue Jays, was Chad Green. He's a reliever who's been with the Yankees, pretty good, but also had Tommy John surgery last year. So, like, he ended up getting, like, a two-year deal with the Blue Jays. Also had a weird structure to it as well, where I think there's a player opt-out. I don't remember which triggers one first. I think Green can opt out after this year. But if he does, then the Blue Jays can pick up a three-year option. Or maybe it's hit the team first, then him. So, like, it has this weird thing where it could be 2 years, it could be four, it could be whatever. But, like, though, I guess the point of that, like, it's basically in a – I was thinking more of, like, a Tommy Canley type deal, mm-hmm. where you're doing a 2 year deal, hoping to get most of it in, you know, you're paying for the second year basically. Although, except his surgery was last June, 2 years before or 2 months ahead of where Canley was 2 years ago. So, like, you could have also gotten something at the end of this year too. So I was thinking it could be something along those lines where, it's not necessarily blocking anyone, you know, or right. anything like that. But like, also, like, if you look at, I think some of the offensive guys out there, I mean, are they, you know, are you going to sign like Jurickson Profar? Is that really going to move the needle?
No,
like,
yeah.
you know, that kind of a thing.
I think the only, and this goes back to how you and I were talking about the roster last time. The only thing that I could see outside of, you know, maybe a relief player, maybe a bench role, if a trade came up prior to the season starting, center fielder does kind of make sense there. That seems to be a little uncertain. But unless the right deal for, like, I don't know, a Brian Reynolds or something comes around, it feels like this is going to be, you know, close to the roster we're going with. Again, not counting NRIs, not counting maybe some of these sort of smaller, maybe you get something like a Tyler Anderson deal from last year, something like that.
Yeah, I think Michael Wacha is still out there from the pitching side. He's probably the closest to like a Tyler Anderson type. Out there. I don't know how they exactly compare, but like, you know, that's the kind of, you're right. Like maybe they do that, but even then they do also have Pepio and Grove like at the ready, but then also, you know, eventually Bobby Miller, Gavin Stone. But so like, do they try to find a guy who can fill like a hybrid role? Like, so we're like, I mean, cause if you sign Walker, right, he's going to be on the roster. So, if he's not starting, do you sign someone like that who's going to be, who you can also use in relief or something, like, or is Michael Grove that guy, you know, or something, mm-hmm. who knows, but I don't know. Like, but it does seem like, cause they've tended to, kind of, go over on that. Like they'll be like, let's just add this guy and we'll sort it out, you know, like we'll figure it out.
But they also have, we sort of talked about this last episode, but to, I think it's worth reiterating. It feels like they have a lot of depth at that almost ready to graduate starting pitching level, which seems like a level of once they have an idea of what they have now, a place they may deal from to try and get that center fielder or maybe shore up, you know, the fourth starter or whatever.
Yeah, like a lot of the major league ready, like rookies, as it were, are very close to the majors, and most of them are on the 40 man, not just pitching, but like even hitting. Like Michael Bush might not start the year in the majors, but he could easily like hit his way onto the team. James Outman could end up winning one of the outfield roles, you know, like that's, and we've talked about like they don't have experience depth. Like Outman has 4 days of service time and he's like on the higher end of a lot of their position player 40 man, but like they're also right there, so like I get why you don't want to necessarily block that, but like it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of plays out. But yeah, that's sort of where we're at roster. We talked a lot about Tony Gonsolin and his arbitration contract, but I will note he's coming off of a year where he was 16-1 in his career. He's 26-6 in the majors. And as you know, on this podcast, we are very pro winning percentage and wins.
We're a big fan of that stat.
Yeah. And so his .813 winning percentage is the highest in Dodgers history with a minimum of 20 decisions. This question got really complicated all of a sudden, but 10 pitchers besides Gonsolin have a winning percentage of at least .700. 5 of them are LA Dodgers. And how many of those can you name?
I will guess 5 of those winning hurlers, all of them, called shot on accident after this break. To stall and let me have more time to think of answers, I have a World Baseball Classic extra innings briefing for you. They did have the runners on whatever bases rule. Funny thing. So the rule, I think, as of the last World Baseball Classic was... starting in the 11th, runners on first and second. So I found that. And then same year, Rob Manfred, WBC extra innings rule, unlikely to come to Major League Baseball. And you know what? He's not lying.
He's
the runner on first.
They're like, we can't have this runner on first. This is an abomination. So, okay. So just as a backdrop for the trivia. So, I noted that, 5 LA Dodger pitchers and 10 total Dodgers pitchers besides Gonsolin have a .700 winning percentage.
Yeah.
I used minimum of 20 decisions. Gonsolin still has the highest overall if you go down to 10 decisions, but keeping it at 20, just as a point of reference, Clayton Kershaw is just below that group at 694.
I'm cross that name off my guest list.
Yeah, so just as a hint, that's my hint to you. I have more hints coming if you want.
I have some names. I will say
all of the LA Dodgers 700 club is firmly within the Jacob era.
Okay, that was going to be one of my questions, so I appreciate
firmly
it.
Firmly within the last decade, in fact.
Okay, that makes me a little more nervous. Yeah. I'm going to cross Koufax off my list real quick. I had more names, including Kershaw, in the recent era. Just to clarify, this is their winning percentage as a Dodger.
That's right.
Okay.
Koufax was 655. What a slacker.
Greinke.
Zach Greinke is number three, 773. He was 51-15.
Urias.
Julio Urias, 742. He's number six. He is 49-17.
Okay. I'm just trying to name the LA ones, right? I don't have to name Dazzy Vance or whatever.
No, you're right. Okay. And just as another hint, Dazzy Vance is not one of the.
Aww.
Yeah. I will.
Is
I will
it Zach Wheat?
No. He pitched 10 times. Yeah. No. Joe McGinnity is number two. He's the highest Brooklyn one.
Okay.
But it's all. Oh, so I did this. No, I did it all seasons. Or maybe this only goes back to 1900. I don't remember. He's 1900 only. So maybe that's an error on this. But he's also not part of our trivia. So
Yeah. Hyunjin Ryu?
No. I will tell you. So you've named two. The other three, two are starters. One is a reliever.
Okay.
And the reliever is left-handed.
J.P. Howell?
It is J.P. Howell. He was 14-6 in his 4 years in the Dodgers.
God, I love it.
what a pull. Ryu... 621 in his 6 years with the Dodgers, by the way.
Okay. Oh, man.
Do you want another hint?
Sure.
All right. Both of these pitchers pitched for the 2022 Dodgers.
Dustin May?
No. Although, I have to look what these are.
Who pitched? What? Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler is... I was wrong before.
He's on the IL in my head, apparently.
So he's also 742. Baseball Reference in their table here has him at seventh, just below Urias, except, that's right. He is seventh. So the reason is, he's 46-16. Urias is 3-1 more than him. So he's slightly higher than Buehler.
Tyler Anderson?
So hold on. Dustin May, 8-8 in his career. So only 500.
I didn't guess.
So your guess, Tyler Anderson, 15-5 with the 2022 Dodgers, 750.
20 decisions really threw me off because I was just discounting. I was really discounting. It had to have been someone pitched like at least two seasons in my head. Like I was just immediately the one and done.
I guess part of this is like, I don't really know what to make of it. Like, is it just... like this is because this is the winningest like era regular season wise in like Dodger history.
That wouldn't make sense.
But also like I think in olden days like starters wore it a lot more too.
Yeah, I was wondering whereas, how many losses in the olden era were blown in the 7th, 8th or whatever inning.
Yeah, so like I don't know the answer to that. But also you would figure they could also get more wins that way too. Because it is weird that Gonsolin is a guy who's racked up wins. He's pitched well, but like he's not always like going deep. He did this year, but like look at May. Like May has pitched just as well as Gonsolin, I think, at times. But he's like you said, 8-8. Like so, like it's just weird how it sort of stacks up that way sometimes. But the Preacher Rowe.
Okay.
Was probably the most notable Brooklyn pitcher on here because he had 93 wins. He's 715. Joe Black, 22-7 in 4 years with the Dodgers. He was the rookie of the year in 52. So yeah, you did really well on that. That's good. JP Howell was a nice pull.
Just the first left-hander I could think of.
Yep.
And also, you know, he had a nice little run there.
Oh yeah, he was reliable.
Hey! Guess what? It's been a few weeks, but it's time for
questions from Craig.
I have some trivia for you from our friend Craig Vanami, and then some et cetera questions after that for the both of us. You ready?
Oh no! Yep.
It's the trivia you should be scared of.
Yep.
This week we had the last set of prospect ratings come out with the Athletics Key Fall ranking the Dodgers as the number one organization in terms of minor league development. For this week's trivia, we look back to the last decade of Dodger prospect ratings and see if Eric can recall these Dodger prospects.
Before you get into the first question, I just want to point a reference. Fangraphs has not come out with their top 100 or whatever list yet.
Okay.
They've done team lists, but they haven't. They are the lone, like, national sort of prospect ranking site that hasn't done the full list yet. So just as a point of correction.
Question A. From Baseball America's 2022 Prospect Handbook, name the Dodger prospects that have been the top prospect twice since 2013. Top Dodgers prospect, just to clarify.
Okay, so Keibert Ruiz.
Yep, 2019 and 2021.
Oh, man. Okay, now I wonder... The top. Is it okay? Now I'm trying to think here. So I think it would have to be Corey Seager.
It is 2015 and 2016.
Yeah. And is that it?
That's
it. Good.
In 2015, the Dodgers had three prospects in Baseball America's top 10. Can Eric name them? And also, can he rank them by most BWAR as of the 2023 season?
Okay, so in 2015, I don't remember the third one being this high, but it probably is. But okay, so it would be Seager, Julio Urias, and Jock Peterson.
Bingo. All three right in the right order.
Okay, so I think it's Seager first in WAR.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's the question. So you have... Urias has been really good the last few seasons, but he's really only been a starter for like a full-time starter for 3 years. And one of those was the pandemic year. Jock though was like kind of middling in terms of WAR, like for a few years there. He had a really good year last year. Man, I think it's Urias and Peterson, but I could be wrong there.
You're right. I actually thought you were giving me the order already. So it was Peterson was actually ranked eighth, and Urias was ranked 10th. So the ordering, Baseball America's ordering, was Seager, Peterson, Urias. But WAR wise, it is Seager in first, and then Urias, and then Peterson.
Yeah, I was looking up because I wrote about. Bobby Miller today or for Thursday, just because where his rankings are, he's averaging like in the 20s on all the national sites. So like I was looking back and the only people who have done that starting pitcher wise for the Dodgers since Kershaw are Urias in 2016. And by 2016, he was like top five or top 10 and like everything. But and then you have Bueller, who was a little bit higher, and then Dustin May, who was closer to Miller entering 2020. But like, yeah, it was just interesting to see how they haven't had that many like pitchers ranked that high nationally, I don't think. But yeah, Urias, I remember 2 years in a row, he was like really high. So that was something.
The 2020 Baseball America Prospect Book had a projected 2023 position lineup, rotation, and closer. How many of these players can Eric name? And before he names any of them, can Eric guess how many of the 14 players on the list are still in the Dodgers organization?
So the general rule for Baseball America, I believe, when they do these 3 years ahead, looking out, they if a player's going to be a free agent, they just assume they're going to stay, like if they're good enough to start. So I'm trying to think. So 2020, that's almost like a year like this year where they didn't have like a super top guy, but they had, oh, maybe I'm conflating. 2019, 2020 were similar in that regard where they had a lot of guys. So I'm trying to think here. So 2020, okay. When the book came out, they hadn't traded for Mookie Betts yet.
I will let you know that is the correct. Yeah, that was the one hint I was going to give you because that affects things quite a bit.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to say Alex Verdugo is in the outfield.
He is.
And then they would also have probably, they'd probably still have Jock.
They do.
Why am I blanking on like who else would be there? I'll get back to that. So Seager still at short.
Seager is on the team. He is on
short. At third.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, so short is Gavin Lux.
Gavin Lux is on the team. He's not at short.
At second.
Yep.
Wow. Wait. So 20. Okay. Holy crap. Wait. No. Did they have Jacob Maya?
Nope.
Well.
I'll remind you that this is before the Mookie Betts trade.
I don't know. Oh, God. Jeter Downs?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. So first base is probably Max Muncy then.
Yep, Max Muncy.
I'm missing one outfielder?
You are center fielder.
Center fielder. Chris Taylor?
No.
No. Oh, wait, but I already said Verdugo.
You did.
I'm going to say Will Smith is catcher, though.
He is. So you're missing only the center fielder.
It's not Kike?
No. You're breaking my... I'll let you know. Primary center fielder for the Dodgers in 2022.
Oh, geez. Yeah. I guess coming off the MVP year, probably Cody Bellinger. Yeah. Wow. Talk about memory hole. Okay. So let's delve into the
pitchers.
It's five starters and a closer?
Correct.
Okay. So
eating some chicken. Sorry about that.
It's all right. Kershaw, Buehler, Urias.
No. Triple checker. Kershaw is not on this list.
Well, they're stupid.
Yeah.
to be fair, 2023. Yeah, yeah, they are stupid. Screw those guys. What, Buehler and Urias though?
Yep.
Okay, I got worried. Like, wait a minute. I'm assuming also. Oh no. Okay. So the thing I think Ryu already signed with Toronto by then.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, since Maeda wasn't traded yet, he was enough of a, like, let's move him to the bullpen guy that he's probably not listed in the rotation. So in 2020, so then it would be, so Dustin May would be in there.
Yep.
And Tony Gonsolin would be in there.
He is indeed.
So I'm missing a one starter.
Yep.
And
a close.
So, oh man, I'm saying Kenley just because he was there then, but I don't have a lot of
confidence. I'll let you know the two remaining pitchers you have to name Neither are on the team currently.
So, Josiah Gray
is the fifth starter.
And then, who else? Nope, that's not it. I'm trying to think of who else was around. I don't know why I'm blanking on reliever. This is captivating audio. Is it someone they traded or just someone who went?
I'm gonna confess, I forget.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm okay. Yes. Yes. They traded this player. I remember the trade now.
They traded. So someone on 2019, who was a good reliever. They're not going to put Ross Stripling at closer, are they?
I'm letting you know right now. In 2019, this pitcher had a 5 innings for the Dodgers at a 7 FIP.
This is infuriating.
If I recall correctly, he was, I'm going to double check this real quick. Standard batting. I seem to recall he led an OPS or something like that. He had, in 2018, he had an OPS plus of 296.
No.
that was a small sample size trivia question you and I did once, so I recalled that.
I don't, yeah.
It is Dennis Santana.
Dennis Santana, wow.
Yeah,
I remember. So he doubled like close to the wall and first bat. I remember that. All right, I'm giving myself a win for that, for remembering that.
Hey, you did a lot, and so 7 players still on the roster, and good on them for that rotation is pretty dang close. If you know,
How did they not have Noah Syndergaard, idiots? Yeah.
Going back to 2000, this is your last question. How many players drafted by the Dodgers in the first round, not necessarily first overall for the Dodgers, have been the Dodgers' number one prospect per Baseball America?
Number one? Well,
can you name them?
Okay. Oh, the Dodgers' number one. I was like...
Yeah, as opposed to... So anyone the Dodgers drafted in the first round is eligible to...
My head was thinking number one overall at Baseball America. So it's like, well, there's only Seager.
And yeah.
Like, you know. Okay, so now... Okay, so... First round only. So Kemp was 6 round. 2000. Is this Baseball America ranking back to 2000 or 2000 draft?
Is applicable to both.
Their 90s drafts were trash anyway, so didn't matter. It might start off with a loss, but I'm going to say James Loney.
Yep. He was number one in 2003, and he was the first-round pick in 2002.
Yeah. So Kershaw.
Drafted in 2006, was number one in 2008.
Then there was the dark periods. Let's see here. I'm trying to think back on some of these drafts. Oh, they lost their 2009 draft because they signed Orlando Hudson. Zach Lee
drafted in 2010, number one in 2012.
Okay, so then one of those years, so I don't remember, this was not a number one prospect, but I can't remember if Chris Anderson was their 2011 or 2012 first round pick, but they weren't number one, so it doesn't matter. Okay, so Bellinger was fourth round in 2013. For the life of me, I can't remember who was number one that year. But
I will let you know you've passed. If you're going in order, you have missed one.
Okay. So
specifically, you've missed the number one prospect of 2006.
Of 2000. Okay. Jonathan Broxton. No, he's second round. Never mind. I'm not saying that.
Player was drafted in 2003.
Okay. So, oh, wait. Nope. Oh, Andy LaRoche?
Mm-mm.
Liar. 2006.
You first own a jersey of Chad this player. Yeah.
God. So LaRoche was like a. Oh, no, he was a later. I was thinking he was like supplemental, but yep, I'm stupid. Okay, so back to the grind here.
I think they should be easy here on out, but.
Right. Oh, 2013 draft was Seager because that was when. Oh, no, 2012 was Seager.
Yep. Because, and then number one in 15 and 16.
Yeah. And then. Because that was the time where. Speaking of Michael Wacha, Bob Nightingale had, after they beat them in the NLCS, they're like, aren't the Dodgers stupid? For Gavin Lux,
2020, number one, and then was a first round pick in 2016. So you're only missing one between Seager and Lux.
Okay. Okay, so it's 14 or 15. Oh, Walker Buehler.
Yep. Yeah. There you go.
Nice.
15 draft, 18. Number one prospect. You did well.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of me too.
The first time Miguel Vargas and Gavin Lux are the keystone combo for the Dodgers. They will bring 500 plus innings between them at second and short respectively. All Lux at shortstop, no innings for Vargas. What do you think of this must-see duo and Glendale going to the spring training?
I think they're going to hit. I don't know. Like, Lux will probably be like fine at short, you know.
He'll probably have some boneheaded throws.
Yeah, but I think he's going to be generally fine. Mm-hmm. Like, but like, I think that gives them the most offensive upside. Like having those four in the infield: Freeman, Muncy, Lux, Vargas. If they hit, they'll put up with whatever. Like, I don't know. And who knows how Vargas is going to play second. It's also going to be weird this year because of, you know, how teams, like, respond to, like, shift restrictions where you have to have two players on each side. So, like, you're never going to have, like, and all in the infield. So you're never going to have, like, Vargas, or I guess it would be, like, Muncy in this case, be in short right field, you know, so you're not going to necessarily position, but they generally position well. So like, there's still going to be guys like position almost up the middle, but just to their side of the bag or whatever.
Right. And
so like,
with this kind of flexibility of left field and having Rojas and team, they can kind of brunt one. So,
yeah. So I think it's worth the risk. Like you were saying, like, I think it's worth seeing if it works, right? Yep. Like, yeah, and then just adjusting if they need to.
Next question. Am I misreading the roster, or is it right to think that the Dodgers are better set up in the bullpen than the starting rotation right now, as opposed to recent history?
I think that's right. Only because, like, so they have, like, you know, five starters set, right? Urias is, like, the most stable at the top. Kershaw's really good, but he's also, like, is basically good to, like, miss time mm-hmm. every single year. And then, you know, Dustin May is coming off Tommy John surgery. He had, like, a relatively normal offseason, I'm assuming. So it's just a matter of what's he going to be like, how much can you count on him. And then Gonsolin is like, okay, can he keep this up? And also, can you count on him for all season? So, like, there's some question marks there, not to mention Noah Syndergaard, who's, I think, when he signed, talking about, like, revamping his entire repertoire, basically, and trying to gain velocity back. So there's a lot of questions there. But that, like I said, and all, like, the next four in line in the minors all have question marks too. So, like, they do have depth there, but it has the potential to be, like, okay, we might be in scramble mode a little bit here at times, but yeah, I think they're more set up in the bullpen. Even as it stands now, I'm reasonably certain they're not going to, like, anoint a closer, and then they're just going to have, they'll probably have, like, Evan Phillips some games, Yancy Almonte some games, you know, Alex Vesia some games or whatever. Like it might depend on matchups, but they have probably a good handful of guys who they are reasonably comfortable with in like late inning stuff. So I think they're in good shape there, for the most part.
With Justin Turner in Boston, do you see Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts having to take on the roles as faces of the Dodgers this season?
I mean, Mookie already is, and Freeman kind of is too. Like,
and them as a pair, really, have maybe it's a little bit of a push narrative, but from what we understand, really dictating the tone of the clubhouse, the sort of very professional, you know, go by the book, don't get overly emotional, steady appearance.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to be different. I'm, you know, with not having like Turner there, but like for the most part, you know, it is kind of Mookie is, you know, kind of the tone setter, and maybe even in a quiet way to a point. Like, so I don't know. It is going to be a little bit. It's going to be interesting. The Dodgers play at Boston, so this year, so Turner doesn't get the, not yet at least, the sort of return ovation, that kind of stuff. So,
and well, they will when they trade for him, but
that's true. Yep.
Final question. I made air fried wontons a few weeks ago, which leads to a 2-part question. Have either of you tried to air fry anything? And if so, how did it go? Second, do you prefer dumplings steamed or fried?
I don't have an air fryer, so I have not. I'm going to get one at some point. I just haven't gotten around to it.
We have our oven broke in the middle of Thanksgiving. I think I mentioned that when talking Thanksgiving. We got a new one, which has an air fry feature. And I have used that, I think, exclusively to reheat frozen or leftover French fries. And it is wonderful at that.
I've heard that about air fryers. And so I guess if I had an air fryer, I would try to put dumplings in there. But I think I prefer them steamed.
Same. Steamed dumplings, absolutely one of my favorite things. And it just can't – I think some of that is just that it's – for me, at least, so unique to steamed dumplings, whereas fried dumplings taste like some similar fried foods to me. So
you did not come out to Southern California, at least for the new year.
I did not. But
we did our sort of annual dim sum get together.
Very heartbroken that I missed it.
That was the last time I've had dumplings. So I've been craving them in a way ever since, but I haven't quenched that thirst or hunger or whatever yet. One thing in an effort to not end on food, I forgot to mention, we mentioned Mookie Betts there. By the time we're recording this, I believe his time is over because I don't think he qualified. But Mookie Betts bowled in the U.S. Open in Indianapolis this week. 3 days, I believe it's eight games a day, 108 bowlers. He was in like 105th place coming into today. So the top 24 go to match play or whatever, but it's pretty cool. Like, he got a sponsor's exemption to get in, but like, whatever, it's fine.
Yep.
It seems kind of cool. Just, that's a nice little hobby to have. And it shows you how good like bowlers are. I think his average coming into today was like for the tournament was like 182, and that's bad. Like, that's considered bad for bowlers or whatever. I am going to look up while we are recording, just so I can give you an updated Mookie Betts finish here. This is going to be exciting radio.
Do you think he's having fried wontons at the bowling? Do you think they just crack back beers? And
Okay. So since we do always end on food, I will say bowling alley French fries, there's usually, it's not like there's a universal thing, but they're almost always great. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mookie Betts picked it up. On day three, he moved it up to 98th place, ended up averaging just under 186 for the tournament. So good for Mookie Betts. Thought that was cool. So go out, everyone. Go bowling. Get some bowling alley fries. Get some bowling alley dumplings, if that's a thing. I don't know. That's good. By the time we record next, I think workouts will have already begun, unless some, I guess, with something happens, we could do another podcast. But yeah, spring training basically here, where baseball is almost back. So yeah,
it's eagerly awaited.
Yep. That's all for us today. Just seamless transitioning here. Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon.